Mercifully, it's a Friday. That's good for you because you don't have to listen to the two of us over the course of the weekend. You can relax and enjoy yourselves.
Unless they want to listen to some of our best of podcasts.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's going to happen a lot. It's McCowan, it's Shannon on the program. We're going to bring in the two Daves, Hodge and Perkins, some hockey talk and maybe some baseball talk after these messages. It's McCowan with Shannon, and we are joined today by a couple of Daves, Dave Hodge, Dave Perkins, with us on the program this day. The Montreal Canadiens are on their way to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time since 1993. Are we, well, we have to all be surprised, but should we be? Was there anything in this strange season that gave indication that this might happen? Hodge, to you first.
Carey Price.
Yeah.
I don't honestly have much more of an explanation than that. I keep wondering when I'm going to watch the Habs win a series and not think that the other team was lousy, which is not giving the Canadians the credit they probably deserve, but we know what the Leafs did. We know what the Jets did, and Vegas was, to me, a big disappointment up front in terms of energy, in terms of their ability to score. We're back to Carey Price, I know. And I do think that Peter DeBoer tied himself in knots with his goaltending choices, and I wonder whether that affected the rest of the team as well as Fleury and Leonard. Not that they cost them the series, although the extraordinary gaffe by Fleury might have turned the series around entirely.
Perk, general comments from you.
Well, Dave said it right in the head. It's Price. I think he's in a situation now, like his name should be on the Conn Smythe Trophy already. And, you know, even if they, who knows, even if they lose the final, wasn't it Roger Crozier the one year? He won the Conn Smythe for a losing team. I mean, this guy's in that realm without knowing, obviously, what happens in the final. But he's been that good. And, you know, I laugh at the local media, you know, experts who were saying before the first playoffs that, Carey Price isn't that good anymore. Jack Campbell, that's pretty much a wash in net. Completely forgetting this guy's relative abilities and his career stamp. I mean, it's just, he's been great. Isn't it wonderful to see a great player be great at the right time?
And be so low key. That's the amazing thing. When you it is the proverbial ice water in the veins when you listen to Carey talk after every game, because he has to talk after every game because he's always a star. His heart rate doesn't get above 45. It feels like that's the amazing thing when it comes to Price. By the way, there are a few guys that won the Conn Smythe with a losing team. I think Glenn Hall did, Reggie Leach did, and Ron Hextall did. So there's a few guys that have won the Conn Smythe with it. Most of them goaltenders. Yeah. But that makes some sense, that because all the three goalies got their teams to the final, based on what they did in the playoff series.
John, Mark Bergevin makes up for the ice water in Carey Price's veins.
Yeah. He was pretty excited, wasn't he?
Oh, well, and you know, the public criticism, I mean, I think Montreal is the hardest market in hockey to play in. Not only are you critiqued by a really knowledgeable fan base, but you're critiqued by, you know, two levels of media, one in English and one in French. Both you Daves know this, it's more than just a game in Quebec. It is it's almost as you can see from the crowds outside, it's almost a lifestyle to watch Montreal play hockey. Mark's not at times the most giving person when it comes to interviews, but I'm happy for him. It's well deserved that he's getting some praise now for how he's rebuilt his hockey club.
Well, speaking of how tough it is to play in Montreal, I couldn't help but think when they called Captain Shea Weber to come and stand beside the Clarence Campbell Bowl, of the reaction when P.K. Subban was traded away from Montreal, beloved for what he did on and perhaps especially off the ice in that city. And nobody, or very few anyway, were willing to accept the fact that Shea Weber might be a decent return for P.K. Subban. Initially, Subban in Nashville had success. Weber in Montreal didn't. There was the long-term contract, expensive, that the Canadians were carrying with Weber. And it for many people, it looked like this was never going to switch to a positive result for the Canadians. Well, last night it did. And Shea Weber has endured all of that and probably turned it in his favor now. Although there will still be those who say, you know, we love PK and we wish he hadn't left. Weber probably might have felt better than any Montreal player, having that ability to go and stand beside Bill Daly in that trophy and be called out as the captain of the Montreal Canadiens.
On the other side, you know, Marc Bergevin made it perfectly clear he was not going to pay Max Pacioretty a boatload of money to stay in Montreal. He had orchestrated a trade to Los Angeles. Los Angeles couldn't come up with a contract for Pacioretty. And Bergevin ended up trading him to Vegas. And part of the return was Nick Suzuki. So even if it was just Suzuki for Pacioretty, another stroke of genius that has turned out, they got younger, they got faster, they got a centerman versus a winger, that this guy has done some right things. And Nick Suzuki has, you know, that line he's on with, let me just remember here, it's been so long, Caulfield and Anderson. I mean, they have some chemistry in this playoff, and Caulfield has made a huge difference too. So this team has reinvented itself very quickly over a 56 game schedule.
So we are spending some time here, or we did earlier, talking about Conn Smythe winners from losing teams, and Montreal Canadiens haven't played a game in the final yet. And I'm not sure we should even be contemplating them being an inferior team. Maybe we just misread the whole situation. Habs were really good at the beginning of the season. They went through a COVID scare. They've had injuries. Carey Price was out for an extended period of time. Hodge, maybe we just didn't pay enough attention to this team.
Well, lots happened to them. They changed coaches, and that's supposed to spell doom as far as ultimate success in the season in which you decide to fire the coach. Ironically, the coach who took over wasn't there for the big playoff win over Vegas. So that stands with an asterisk like we've never seen in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But Bob, you know, in the end, they're the worst of the 16 playoff teams, according to the record. And I don't think anybody could foresee this, except to say in the Stanley Cup playoffs, anything can happen. And I'll repeat it, and we might as well say it every time we end a sentence, everything comes back to Carey Price. And you're quite right that they shouldn't have been underestimated for him alone.
Perk, I'll throw it to you. Tampa or the Islanders, is it possible to even analyze which of those two would be more difficult for the Habs?
Well, I don't think so. Like David said, playoffs, anything can happen. And if you have the goaltender, that's, you know, three quarters of the battle. Now, this wouldn't be the first time Montreal's done this. Remember when Dryden came out of nowhere as a kid and they beat the Bruins? I mean, that Bruins team might have been the greatest team ever, not to win the Stanley Cup with the Esposito and Orr and the whole bunch of them back in the day. So, I mean, Montreal's done it before. It if you have the goaltender, does it really matter who they're facing at this point? Like, as someone said earlier, they've won three series and they made the other three teams look bad. And we tend to think of the losers, you know, being masters of their own fate. Well, maybe Montreal just made them look bad, and they know that having Price behind him helps that.
I'll throw a name at you, Bob,
yeah.
That would help to answer your question. I think Nikita Kucherov.
Sure.
First of all, if he plays game seven, then or he doesn't, that's a big difference and might determine who the Canadians are meeting. And if Tampa Bay manages to get by the Islanders without Kucherov and Kucherov can't play against the Canadians, then that's a huge factor, given that Tampa Bay's power play should be an advantage. And the reason it is that everything goes through Kucherov on the power play for Tampa Bay. Other than a goaltender, Price or Vasilevsky, no player is more important in the rest of these playoffs than Kucherov. John, would you agree?
I would. And I mean, there are a couple of storylines in there. And, you know, in television, we always try to create storylines. So if Kucherov doesn't play, then all of a sudden in round one, it was Tavares. In round two, it was Scheifele. In round three, it was Chandler Stephenson. And round four, it's Kucherov. And the dominoes just seem to be falling for Montreal. The other thing that you mentioned, Dave, was Tampa's power play. Well, Montreal hasn't allowed a power play goal since game four of the Toronto series. They went, I think it was 0-8 against Winnipeg and 0-15. Their power play, the visiting power play went 0-15 against Montreal in the Vegas series. So their four defensemen, particularly their bigger defensemen, I think that's something that probably deserves a little more credit than most people are giving. When you think of Shea Weber, you talked about, but Edmondson's been really good. Petrie's been really good. And Ben Chiarot has been, I think, been so good for Montreal through these whole playoffs. A physical guy, you know, you're not going to get points out of him. You're going to expect him to play defense. And he's done that very, very well.
Here's what qualifies as a surprise, I think. I would say we all believe that in these days you can't win the Stanley Cup unless you've got depth. And every general manager at the trade deadline talks about adding depth. I'm not sure we thought Montreal was nearly as deep as Montreal is proving to be. And even at that, a guy like Jake Evans, whose absence is not mentioned ever since Scheifele knocked him silly, Jake Evans was playing 16 and a half minutes, mm-hmm. and was a valuable member of a Montreal forward unit that, though he wasn't scoring, he was doing a lot to add to that depth of the Canadians. And even without him, they are showing that they have depth up front. Cole Caulfield obviously has added to it. The four pillars on defense, as John mentioned, don't think we're talking about six defensemen because the fifth and sixth guys don't play a lot. But even, you know, a couple of those big four would have been considered depth guys at the start, and now they're stars. So the Canadians are a whole lot deeper than anybody thought. And even, you know, Perry and Staal, we shrugged our shoulders. And what are they doing? What are they adding? Well, they've added depth.
Sure. And this is a league where people talk about obviously defense, but strength down the middle. And to Bob's question about start of the season, if you looked at Montreal, you'd say, well, you know what? I'm not sure they're very good down the middle. I'm not sure that they have what some of the other teams in this division, the North Division, have to make it. And on top of that list was Philip Deneau, who turned down a really good contract offer before the season started. And as the season wore on and he kept not scoring and not scoring and not scoring, people were suggesting, oh, he's made a mistake. He's made a mistake. Now he's become so valuable as a centerman, as maybe not the number one centerman anymore, but as a centerman, particularly on the defensive side of the puck, that he's increased his value through these playoffs and is in a pretty good position again. So the weaknesses that we thought this team had, not enough depth, no strength down the middle, have both proved to be absolutely incorrect. So if we're talking about should we take them lightly in the final, absolutely not, to the point where I don't care who they're playing, I'm going to pick them no matter what, just because I'd like to see it once.
Here's a spicy question, if I might. Is the rest of Canada, particularly Toronto, cheering for the Canadians?
The rest of Canada is.
Oh, yeah.
I've never understood that whole premise of adopting a team based on your nationality. As an American, under that premise, who would I cheer for in Major League Baseball if the Blue Jays weren't in it? I mean, I have no attachment to any other particular team. I mean, I agree with you, David. Well, or
no, Perk. I didn't answer my own question. I know you didn't.
Perk did, essentially. And I understand that that's probably what is happening. What I don't understand is why that is happening. How can you be a Toronto Maple Leaf fan and hate the Montreal Canadiens 11 months of the year and then suddenly flip over and say, well, because they're from Canada, I'm now going to cheer for them?
Leaf fans aren't rooting for them. I didn't say that.
Oh, I think there are some.
Other
Canadians. I think it's the same premise that we talked about. It's this, if they're from Canada, if they're Canadian-based, I'm going to root for them.
One
Leaf fans, sorry, David, go ahead.
Oh, so the guy who lit the CN Tower is one guy.
There you go.
and the lights at Niagara Falls.
Leaf fans are having a double hooping here. You know, Lamoriello, two times in a row, executive of the year. The guy wasn't smart enough to not get into salary cap hell here. He's won two executive of the year in a row, and now the Canadians are in the Stanley Cup final, where the Toronto Maple Leafs have not been for 54 years and counting. Of course, Leaf fans, this is double, you know, this is a double hooping for them.
So it's Montreal versus the Islanders, and a Leaf fan hopes for whom?
Hopes for nobody. They just pull the covers over their head and hope for a third T-shirt to come up. You know, third sweater.
They hope the borders open so they can go to Buffalo to watch the baseball team.
Yeah.
No, what happens to the TV ratings here? I'm sure Sportsnet is happy because there's a Canadian team involved, but it's not the Toronto Maple Leafs, which would give you the biggest bang for your buck. John, let me throw it at you as the former TV guy.
Double. Is
this great news?
Oh, it's the thrilling news. Thrilling news. I suspect that they have now gone, particularly the way the Cinderella story, I think they've probably gone from an average of 2 million for the Stanley Cup final with Vegas and Tampa or the Islanders to 4 million. I think they've doubled their ratings. I think that's because of the Canadian content, it will double what Rogers has been able to get out of the Stanley Cup final. I don't think there's any question. The interesting thing is, just to go back, the last time there was a team from Canada in the Stanley Cup final, 2011, the only people that cheered for the Vancouver Canucks were the people in British Columbia. The rest of the country cheered for the Boston Bruins. I think it's different this time. I think most of the country will cheer for Canadians, except for, you know, that avid Leaf group in Southern Ontario.
Well, they're apart from who's watching on TV, how many people will be watching in the Bell Centre? How much pressure will it be on the Quebec government, the Canadian government first, perhaps? I don't know how that'll work. But you have to realize that the intense interest in this series in the province of Quebec will bring all sorts of demands, pressure. You know, you got to let us into the Bell Centre so we can be part of this, just like the Islanders fans or the Tampa Bay fans. And is it a factor if one team has a packed house, especially if it's Nassau Coliseum, which I think is a weapon all its own? John, we've been there often enough to know that that building and those fans that occupy it can make a difference. If it's the Islanders with a full house and the Canadians with 3,500, have we got a lack of balance in terms of how the series could turn out because of that?
Well, it's hard for me to be sympathetic to the rich cats that own the season tickets, but God bless them. I mean, I don't know what they'll be able to do, Dave, if they can't get into the.
Imagine if it was the Leafs, and I don't know that it would be any different.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't be any different. It'd be a bunch of rich guys who would be whining and complaining, and I have no sympathy for them.
But would you not prefer to see a full house just for the spectacle?
I think, of course, but we're in COVID, and I'm not capable. I don't know if any of the four of us are capable in making that determination based on what little information is, you know, filtered down to through us.
Well, I'll tell John, you know, Dave's the music guy. So Madison Square Garden, I think it was the Foo Fighters that had a sold out house at Madison Square Garden. You had to be fully vaccinated in order to, and you had to prove to be fully vaccinated to go to the concert. You wonder if there's a way, and if listen, sense. There were 40,000 people outside, shoulder to shoulder. If that wasn't a super spreader, I don't know what was. So from that perspective, if the provincial government and the health authorities in Montreal and the Canadians could say, listen, if you have been double vaccinated, we will sell you a ticket. Perhaps that's the way to go around it, and in good conscience, allow 18,000 to 20,000 people into the Bell Center.
Well, we all not agree that this is going to be, probably is, beginning this morning, a fact that there's going to be a lot of discussion, and the government is going to have to make a decision that is either way is going to please some people and displease others.
Mm-hmm. But the government already made a decision. It waived the, you know, the quarantine for the visiting mm-hmm. hockey team. They haven't waived it. They never waived anything for the Raptors, and never waived anything for the Blue Jays. They waived it for the Montreal Canadiens, and I can guarantee you they wouldn't have waived it for the Edmonton Oilers or Toronto.
Mm. Oh no, they would.
I don't think.
They had already agreed to, Dave. They had already agreed to for the third round. But what happens is that the players, in order to play in the US, they have to go back and live in the bubble, in the semi bubble. They can only go to the hotel. They can't go on the street. They can't go out the patio. They have to be more diligent. And I'll tell you what, there were lots of times in the games in Vegas in this series against Montreal where the federal government and the provincial government of Quebec were watching, saying that guy didn't have his mask. George McPhee's got to have his mask on. This guy's got to have his mask on. Look what's happened. And so this is not just giving hockey a pass. This is hockey's under a microscope, and the league is having to police everybody in order to try to make sure they play by the rules.
I want to talk about the importance of fans at sporting events. When the NHL season started, I can imagine there was a meeting in New York, and the first thing they said was, well, we're going to play. We don't need fans. We don't need fans. We don't need fans because we have to play because of TV and this and that and the other. The game between the Islanders and Tampa the other night, game 6 on Long Island, and what the fans added to that spectacle on TV and to the game on the ice versus any game that has been played in a Canadian rink. Fans are very, very important. Mm-hmm. And if only for that reason, you know, yeah, you got to be following the health concerns at all times. But it would be a shame if there's half of the Stanley Cup final that's thrilling because of a packed house and the other half has, let's face it, kind of boring. Last night was kind of boring until, until it ended.
Guys, let's take a break. We'll come back after these messages. We are back. It's McCallum. It's Shannon with the Daves, Hodge and Perkins. We've spent the first part of this program talking about the Montreal Canadiens and eaten up a fair bit of the time. Only a short segment here, but I thought we should probably bring the Blue Jays into this equation, a couple of baseball guys with us. We talked about this the other day. It's such an interesting game. You can change your opinion of the relative merits of a team and the prospects of that team 20 times over the course of a baseball season, not just because it's long, but because of the ebbs and flows. A couple of weeks ago, the Blue Jays looked like they couldn't beat anybody. Their bullpen was a disaster. They lost a bunch in a row, fell below 500. Now they've gotten kind of the weak sisters of baseball the last little bit. The schedule's better for them. They've won, I don't know, what, 5 in a row?
Mm-hmm.
But in relative merit, Dave Perkins, to you first. Is this team capable of making the playoffs without a big splash addition?
I would say ask me Monday, because I think right now these next 3 days are the most important of the season to this point. And here's why. They're going to sweep Baltimore, I would say. But Baltimore's, you know, a Triple-A team with a couple of good hitters and no major league pitchers with Means of. They're going to destroy Baltimore the way they did last year. Boston and the Yankees are playing. So one of those teams is going to lose two games. So Blue Jays are going to gain two games on one and a game on the other if they take care of business. All of a sudden, they're going to be 2, 3, 4 games out in the loss column. And the task is obviously simple at this point. They need to beat 2 of Boston, New York, and Tampa to make the playoffs, because they're not going to catch Oakland, and Houston's gone on everybody. Okay? So you got your East winner, whoever it is, the Central winner, whoever it is, Houston and Oakland. Oakland's 15 games over 500 at this point. And playing great. I mean, Houston's won 10 in a row, and Oakland's what, 2 games behind, I think? Mm-hmm. That's it. So now you got 4 teams playing, and that doesn't even count Cleveland, you know, Seattle, whoever else is over 500. So this weekend, I think if the Jays take care of business, they are absolutely back in it Monday morning or Tuesday or whenever the series ends. So, yes, there are pitchers available. Kyle Gibson's available. They're going to have to bite the bullet and pay some money. There's no question about that. But this team's going to is in for a huge bullet biting in terms of money going forward. You got to pay Vladdy. You don't have to pay Bichette yet because he's only first-year arbitration eligible, so he won't kill you. But, you know, they're paying Springer next year $30 million. They're paying Ryu $20 million every year. They've got to pay Vladdy. Now, are they going to get him on a Kuna type contract, you know, the 8 years for 100 or not? So, I mean, the money coming.
Don't forget Simeon.
That's for sure. So, well, I don't think there's any chance they can re-sign Simeon. Simeon's made himself $100 million this year with a tremendous year. He bet on himself. Right? You can't qualify Simeon, remember, right, because he was qualified last year, turned it down. So he can't be qualified. So he's going to get a full free agent contract. Now, when you look at what the Jays have got to pay, they got to pay Teoscar. They got to pay Bichette. They got to pay Vladdy a couple of $100 million. They're still paying Springer. They're still paying Ryu. All of a sudden, I don't think you can pay Simeon as well. So this is the year to shoot the gun. You bite the financial bullet, you make a trade for the pitching you need, a starter and a reliever, and shoot the guy. I think it's worth doing with this offense the way they're going right now. I think it's worth spending the money and adding.
My answer, Bob, is that without the moves that you suggest might be necessary, they're probably going to be a little short. But if they make the right moves, I think they are capable of getting past, shall we say, the Red Sox or the Yankees or both.
Or both.
You know, they're 5 games back of the Red Sox, and there's lots left. My question is, do they have the motivation to do it this year, given the fact that they're not selling any tickets at Rogers Center, that there's a limited number of tickets they're selling in a place that isn't home, Buffalo. And are they saying, we're going to get whatever we can get out of this season and go hell bent for leather when we can get back home and try to put 40,000 people into the Rogers Center with a team that is stronger than this one based on moves that we can make in an offseason? I would love to know, get inside the heads of Shapiro and Atkins to see how important they think this season is in and of itself. And it's a good debate as to how they should think.
Well, I'll throw my two cents in here, and I'm intrigued with yours. I don't think this season matters that much. I think this is a longer term build. I don't think this team is likely to be inferior next year, whether you sign Semien or not. I would like to see them sign him, and I probably would sign him because it's not my money. But I'm not paying for a Band-Aid, and especially in the starting rotation. I want a stud, and I would like a stud who can be here for 2 or 3 years, because I think that's really the window from an economic standpoint and from a player standpoint. The window is not just this year. It's the next 2 or 3. And you got to fill the holes accordingly, don't you guys?
Sure, but as long as the window's open, you have to make moves every year.
Yes, but, yeah, but you can't, if you do that, you just got to make sure. And I agree with Bob. You can't compromise next year and the year after for anything this year, because if you go to the World Series and you still can't play in Toronto, you can't measure any revenue. You need to be able to measure the revenue out of this as well.
I don't even care about the revenue, John. Revenue doesn't mean anything to me. Winning means something to me, wherever it is. If it's in Buffalo, whatever. You know,
but their payroll is $131 million this year, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to take a huge bath. But what is it? We've said it a thousand times. It's programming for Rogers.
That's right.
It's eyeballs. It's that's what they look at it as. And I think they're less of a team without Semien. I mean the infield defense, Vladdy aside, who's improved dramatically. Infield defense has been horrible on the left side. Mm-hmm. We know that. Semien's been very, very good player for them. Outfield defense is still bad. Well, maybe that improves with Springer back. But what everybody forgets is when Springer comes back, a really good bat is out of the lineup every night.
Which one?
Because now you got five guys. Well, it just depends. If you play, you know, Teoscar and Grishuk, there's no room for Gurriel in the outfield.
So he's a DH. Gurriel,
one of those guys got a DH.
Yeah.
So once you start DHing that, now you got 8 right-handed hitters, and all of a sudden, now you got Biggio at third base, you know what I mean? I realize you win when you got a lot of good players. Well, they got a lot of good hitters right now. Not so much defenders, but they got a lot of real
good hitters. They have such good hitting that they should be in playoff contention. Do we not agree with that?
Sure. Absolutely. And if you got to trade a hitter or a couple of – somebody will do it. Miami's loaded with pitching. Well, they'd love a
good luck with that. Give me the historical relevance of 2 good pitchers for 1 good hitter.
No, but I'm just saying to Young.
It's the other way around.
One guy who can – you know, I mean, what are you going to wait on Nate Pearson again? He goes 2 innings and he has to go on the DL. Like, he's got 18 innings in his life.
Well, I think we understand they need pitching. Okay. But the question is, do you go get a Band-Aid or do you go get a cure? Like, do you go and try and get
Gibson's
a Scherzer?
Got an extra year.
Hmm?
Guy like Gibson's got an extra year. Scherzer is a free agent. So you don't give much for Scherzer. You don't give the A prospects, the Martins and Groshans and everything. You're certainly not going to give those guys up for a like you call it a Band-Aid.
I would. But here's a concern I would have. The wear and tear on the left arms of Ryu and Ray. You know, they're having to go into the hundreds in terms of pitches per game just to get 6 innings, maybe, and hope for 3 innings from the bullpen. And they're really being pushed. And I guess you can understand why, but if that turns out to be damaging to those two guys, then their chances go up in smoke. And I would think it's more important to keep those guys healthy than it is to rush for the playoffs this year.
Well, injuries are inevitable, and they're always a part of the equation in determining who makes it to the postseason. You close your eyes, you cross your fingers, and you cross your toes, and you hope that everything works out. I will say this. This rotation, theoretically, isn't that bad right now if it stays healthy. there are five guys in this rotation that have done a pretty good job. I'm not sure I would mess with it. And if one of them does go down, or worse, two go down, you're dead anyway. So, if you go and get Scherzer, here's a maybe a different way. If you go and get Scherzer, who's the odd guy out?
Manoah.
Yeah. But Manoah's pitched pretty well. I get that Manoah would probably be the odd guy out because he's 22 and doesn't have a lot of innings. But it's not really on merit, I don't think. I think the guy still can be a competent major league pitcher this year, and the rest of this year, and he's got huge upside down the road. So
Houston Astros are using a six-man rotation.
Here's
well, what I'm going to argue: Ryu is on a 5.5 sure. day rotation.
Well, you can go with a six-man rotation.
You know what they should look for a pitcher, and you could find one. Maybe you have to make them into one. They should look for a guy who can go three innings out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Innings 5, 6, and 7, or 6, 7, and 8. Before Julio Urias was a starter with the Dodgers, I mean, they won a World Series that way by, letting the starter go as far as he could and then say, Julio, come in and get us the rest of the way.
Every team had one, Dave.
Never mind, we got Kenley Jansen. So, You can find or develop a guy who can give you 9 outs instead of 3, and I think that's what they need.
Used to have one. It was called the long relief guy, and every team had one of those guys.
Okay,
it's just sort of disappeared now.
Tell you what, I'm just going to reiterate. I'm not selling anything that's important to this franchise for the short term, and I'm not doing it until I'm in my own building and selling lots of tickets. I'm not. It doesn't make any sense.
That's where I started this discussion. And I think there's at least half of the minds of Shapiro and Atkins that have to be thinking that way. Whether it's the right way to think, I don't know. But it's only natural that from a business standpoint, they're taking that into consideration. Hopefully not saying, let's forget about this season. But on the other hand, hopefully not saying this season is all important and we're going for broke. And if it doesn't work, at least we tried. Well, I think probably better to try next season that way than this one.
Yeah.
But I would say they've already started down this path this year. I think last year they went 9-1 against Baltimore, 2-27 against everybody else. I think they got fooled and they made the postseason because it was a cheese season with extra postseason. And I think they got fooled and went out and spent $150 million on Springer. And they spent $18 million on Semien on a one-shot deal. And they signed Robbie Ray as a free agent. I would they give him 8 or 10, I don't know. But they've already started down this path because they spent a boatload of free agent money last winter. So all of a sudden you want them to back up and say, well, now we're going to become a farm team. Farm development team again.
No, I didn't say that. What I said was, is that I'm going to go to the end of this season with this group, not prepared to give up some of my future, one of those hitters or one of my prospects, because I think we'll be even better next year, even if we do have to spend all that extra money on players, Dave.
Do you think they had any idea that Semien would do what he's doing?
I guess Semien did. I think he bet on himself. As they said.
I think a better question to that, Dave, is did any of us? And yeah. I would say no.
Well, I mean, at first blush, I scratched my head and said I thought Kevin Biggio and Bo Bichette would be the
middle
shortstop second base combination here for 10 years.
Me too.
And suddenly. Biggio doesn't have second base as his position. So where are you going to play him? Well, he wind up at third base where he does not belong. Underline that every time he goes there and tries to make a throw to first or field a ground ball or whatever. He does not belong at third base. And the reason he's there is that Semien is at second base, perhaps only for one season. So I think they're a little betwixt and between in terms of of where they expected to go this season based on bringing in Semien, unless, you know, they're going to go all the way and try to keep Semien, in which case, they've got themselves a great player for more than 1 year.
Well, in conclusion here, I'm sure that the hearts at Rogers are warm with John. Your concern about their economic plight.
Always, I'm always concerned about that.
The multi-billionaire, they make billions of dollars every quarter, and the fact that they can't get fans into the SkyDome/Rogers Center should give them angst. Them and their shareholders.
Full circle, if they do make the playoffs and go any farther than a wild card game, perhaps pressure to allow fans into the Rogers Center, just like we're talking about pressure to let fans into the Bell Center. It'll happen.
Yeah. Well,
that's a few months away.
That's a good problem to have. That's a good problem to have.
Boys, we thank you for your time as always. We wish you a good weekend, and we'll look forward to the next opportunity we have to chat. Thank you to the two Daves. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Back after these messages. So one of the confusing things is having two guys named Dave on. We shouldn't do that again. As much as I enjoy both of their company, it makes it more difficult. You got to call them by their last name, which I'm far more comfortable with anyway, Shannon.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to the producer and get two more guys named Bob next week, so we can have three Bobs and a John.
Oh, great. Yeah, that'll work really well. Yeah. That's the kind of producer we have.
He needs a day off.
Have a good weekend, Shannon, and we'll see you on Monday if the creek don't rise.
Hockey preview on Monday.
Same to all of you watching or listening. Goodbye, everybody.